I cannot believe that the majority of Americans want to finance the detention of innocent people.
Hi, I'm Anthony Fisher with Reason TV, and I'm joined by Hina Shamsi, the director of the National Security Project with the American Civil Liberties Union, and one of the lawyers representing Mamadou Ould Slahi, the author of The Guantanamo Diary and a current inmate at Guantanamo Bay. Thanks so much for joining us, Hina.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Can you tell us a little bit about Slahi and what his background was and how he ended up in U.S. custody?
Absolutely. So Mohamedou is a 44-year-old Mauritanian citizen. He was born there. He won a scholarship to Germany and went and studied engineering in Germany. He'd returned to Mauritania in around 2000 and voluntarily turned himself in to questioning by the Mauritanian police, and that would be the last his family saw of him. Over the next 14 years, he was transferred to Jordan, where he was tortured and abused, transferred again by the United States to Bagram, where he was further tortured and abused, and then transferred to Guantanamo in August 2002, where he was subjected to a special interrogation program, that terrible euphemism we've come to now know is torture, authorized specifically by Donald Rumsfeld. He remains there still.
Why was the United States looking for him after 9/11?
The United States, remember at this period of time, the United States was picking up people around the world and capturing them, sending some to black sites, sending others to Guantanamo. And they picked him up based on a variety of suspicions, which have all been shown to be false. So they alleged involvement in the Millennium Plot. That turned out not to be true.
The Millennium Plot, which was to attack the Los Angeles airport.
That's right. Yeah. That's turned out not to be true. They alleged that he was a recruiter for Al-Qaeda. That's turned out not to be true. And I think it's important to point out that the only neutral person who has evaluated all the facts in a case is a federal judge who, in 2010, ordered Mohamedou released. But the government appealed, and he still remains at Guantanamo.
But he did swear allegiance to Al-Qaeda in the early 90s and went to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets, correct?
Correct, and he admits that. He's admitted that to the military over and over again. And what he said, and what the judge found, was that he went, like so many others, to Afghanistan to fight the communist regime there in the early 90s. He was part of a movement that was at the time supported by the United States. And the Al-Qaeda that he joined was very different, and the judge said this, from what Al-Qaeda later became. He had no connection with them post-1992.
There was no evidence of any threats of violence or religious extremism that would have tied him to what we know of as bin Laden's Al-Qaeda?
No, and he's repeatedly rejected that. He describes that also in his book. So there is actually no evidence of a legal basis to detain him. He's never been part of the armed conflict between the United States and Al-Qaeda, and he's never participated in any hostilities against the United States.
Let's talk a little bit about the book. He wrote the book in 2005, and now it's 2015, and it's being released to wide acclaim. Can you talk a little bit about how he came to write the book and how it was able to get out and see the light of day?
Well, I'll start with an anecdote which I think gives you a flavor of who Mohamedou is, which is that when one of our co-counsel asked him to talk about the interrogations that he had gone through, to describe all of the interrogations, his response was, "Are you crazy? That's like asking Charlie Sheen how many women he's dated." But in around the summer and fall of 2005, he started writing down because he wanted the world to know, and he specifically wanted Americans to know his story. This is a book that's very much addressed to all of us. It turned into a 400-plus page manuscript, and we, his lawyers, fought for over 6 years through litigation and negotiation with the government to get it cleared for release. It was cleared with over 2,500 redactions. Those redactions are still in the book as published. But it is, I think, and I hope people will read it and find, a deeply humane, human, and sometimes even funny account of one man's journey through the arduous place that the United States took him. And I think another part of this that's so unusual is that Mohamedou's account is of being in a place that was established to dehumanize people like him. And he sets out in his book to describe what that's like, but he also humanizes those who are supposed to represent us, his American jailers, some of them his torturers and interrogators. And you get a real sense of what it is that we have done not only to the victims of our policies, but what it is that we do to our military service members when we ask them, interrogators, to break the minds and bodies of human beings.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What's an example in the book of him trying to humanize his captors?
He tries to understand why his interrogators are asking him these questions. He talks about his guards. With some of the guards, the friendlier guards, he engages in discussions about politics, about religion, about chess. Some of those guards become his friends. They give him books when they are leaving off rotation, hoping that he's going to someday be released. And I think that humanity comes through. He talks about how this wasn't a family that he chose, but because of the circumstances he's in, some of these people are the family that he now has, even as he yearns for the family that he has not seen for over 14 years.
For a time, the U.S. government was claiming that Salahi broke open and was one of their greatest sources of information on al-Qaeda, and now it doesn't appear that much of the information he gave is useful at all. Can you talk a little bit about why the U.S.'s position on the information he gave has changed?
Well, I can tell you what Mohamedou says in the book about the information that he was providing to the government, which is that he was subjected to terrible torture, beatings, stress positions, extreme temperatures, faked execution, threats against his mother. And after a period of that, he started to self-incriminate falsely. He said, I told them, you know, the worst about myself because that's what they wanted to hear. And so you get a real sense about the only two things that torture guarantees, which is false information and pain. There's one part of the book that is particularly striking in that way. He says that he learned to forget the words, I don't know, because when he thought about those words, he grew nauseous.
What stopped Salahi from petitioning for habeas corpus?
Well, Mohamedou did petition for habeas corpus, and that's where we represented him in court, and that's where, you know, he's still waiting for his case to go forward. One key aspect of this is he, like so many of the other men at Guantanamo, is being held without charge or trial. And there are two military prosecutors, former military prosecutors, who refused to go forward on his case. One of them, Colonel Stuart Couch, found out about the torture and decided that as a man of religion, ethics, and morals, he could no longer continue on Mohamedou's case. The second is the former chief military prosecutor at Guantanamo, Colonel Morris Davis, who said that he tried to look for any crime with which to charge Mohamedou in the military commissions and couldn't find one.
Can you talk a little bit about Salahi now? He's aware that the book has been published and that it's gotten a positive reception. What is his life like now, and what's next for him?
Well, because of the government secrecy regime at Guantanamo, I can't describe to you what life is like for him. What I can tell you is that he's in a prison. He's in a terrible place. He was recently visited by one of my co-counsel, who told him that his book had become a New York Times bestseller and was on the bestseller list for 3 weeks, about the close to 50,000 people who signed a petition by the ACLU for his release. And he was deeply, deeply moved. He is tired. He's been through a lot. He's never been charged with a crime. He wants to go home. This book is really addressed to the American public. And at the end of the book, Mohamedou says, I want to know what the public thinks. I cannot believe that the majority of Americans want to finance the detention of innocent people. And This book is his hope that people of conscience, people who are committed to liberties, will read it, be moved by it, and be moved to do something about it.
What do you say to people who think that indefinite detention without charges is in the national security interests?
Indefinite detention without charge or trial is deeply un-American, goes against our laws and our values. But let's take on that argument, which is that there are a tiny, tiny fraction of people released from Guantanamo, all of them released by the Bush administration, who have been accused of being hostile to or engaging in acts against Americans. Guantanamo's very existence, right, is, according to the president, national security experts, military and intelligence, a national security threat to us. The fact that it exists hurts our national security. It also hurts our finances and economies. The current estimated cost by Miami Herald of holding a single prisoner at Guantanamo for a year is over $3 million now. So when it hurts our laws, our values, our morality, our ethics, there is no good argument to keep it in place, and it should be closed.
We've been talking with Hina Shamsi, the director of the National Security Project with the American Civil Liberties Union, and one of the lawyers representing Mamadou Ould Slahi, the author of The Guantanamo Diary. Thanks so much for joining us. For Reason TV, I'm Anthony Fisher.